Mr. Harold Fine, Reel 4. We're talking about when you were at Asbury Park. There were two hotels there, the Barclay Carteret and the Monteroy was the name. And one thing I wanted to ask was, one thing that people have mentioned is how much better the food was than what they were used to. Do you recall that?
Yes, no question about it. I mean, the food was very satisfactory, and on top of that, we were invited out to one household in particular.
Before we got sticking to the food they provided first at the hotel, what was so good about it?
I can't remember. No, it would be impossible to remember. All I remember is there was no rationing. As much as you wanted. I mean, you've got your food served on big metal divided trays, rather like the American Navy did, US Navy. And, it would be impossible to remember a meal or an individual thing. All I can remember is it was good and plenty of it.
Now, what about the relationship with the local people?
Well, we had one or two families who we were certainly got very friendly with. And we went to the kids' school and would ask you a little talks who we were and what we were. And by and large, the hospitality extended to us was very, very good. I mean, while I was there, I was able to go for a weekend to Newark, New Jersey, which was not that far away, because Edgar Park was in the state of New Jersey. I had a cousin living in New York, and got a 7-day leave with the family up there. Saw quite a bit of New York.
What about sticking to the US civilians? The locals, what did they do for you then?
Entertained us in their homes, maybe.
Just one of your a bunch of.
Well, we could be two or three to a home and several homes. I mean, I think, if I remember right, it's a fellow that wrote with me, with Arthur Kennedy, who I joined, and a fellow called Nicky Carter. I seem to remember exactly. Asking me to remember, I'm not going to go individual names. We are talking 55 years ago.
And what was it they offered? You can be offered hospitality, and it's the most dreary thing you can imagine. But, I mean, what were they giving you? Were they giving you things you wanted? Beer, cigarettes, the rest of it?
Oh, yes, I mean, hospitality in so much as you've got very nice food, you've got treats that took you out. Those sorts of people there, so they took you out in the car, showed you around. Once again, I can't remember details. Things that you've been guessing.
And what about entertainment, general? I mean, what did you do for entertainment there? They talk about the USO clubs. I don't know what they are.
It stands for United States Organization. It was a very much better sort of thing than our NAFI. Whereas our NAFI was just a bar for somebody to get a meal. Here, the USO is an organization that you could go to, and they'd say, what do you want to do today? I'd like to go to the pictures. Okay, there's a ticket to go to the movies. And when I come out, I'd like to have a meal. There's a ticket to go to a restaurant and have a meal. There's a baseball game. Would you like to go? You get free tickets for all sorts of entertainment, which obviously was very gratifying, considering relative to those days, we used to get in money $16. No, our money was 16 shillings a fortnight, and in America, when we got there, we were so short of money that I don't remember the United States Navy or the Royal Navy gave us $0.50 a day extra money. I think it's $0.50 a day, or maybe a week, I'm not sure, but I think it's $0.50 a day, but obviously. We were very financially restricted, very conservative with what retired paid on us. I suppose one might say it was like living in city streets almost. We did our duties. I had to go on one or two courses.
Now, what were these causes? Because I was quite interested in what's the difference between RDF and radar? Is that just another name for it?
Yeah. First of all, the word radar stood for radio and direction and ranging. That was the American designation, and it seemed to get taken on by all of them. If they insisted on what it was, I don't know, but that's what we became known as AV radar. Now, I went on a course to their radar school, which was. And the reason was because we were going to work on American equipment on the ships that were being built. And we went down to a place called Asbury Park, no, Point Florida, Norfolk, Virginia, which was an enormous naval establishment. And I can't tell you, we had heard about this, but I saw in my own eyes in Norfolk, Virginia, the signs were the outside places, dogs and sailors not admitted. There was segregation in the 8th degree. We then went on to a place.
What was the course like? What do you recall of the thing?
The course was at a place called Virginia Beach, which was outside Virginia. Once again, the US Navy had taken over hotels, sleeping four to a room, two up, two down bunks. Very comfortable. There was four of us in a class of which consisted of US Navy radar men training to use the same equipment because they were also going to the same types of ships as us, but they were going to be under the US Navy flag as opposed to under the white ensign. We were trained on a set called an SL. It was a very, very advanced set in comparison to what we had. An extremely efficient set, and it was operated by an enormous valve called a magnetron. It was highly secret in those days, very highly secret. And if my memory serves me correctly, the magnetron, one of the great features of the magnetron, it gave a very narrow beam, which obviously made this made the bearings very accurate because it was very narrow. Once again, I'm going from memory, but I think it was 2 centimeters.
Now, this set also, the RDF had given the direction, but this radar thing gave the range as well. Is that it gave both, but the RDF had only given direction.
No, they'd given range as well.
Oh, right. So
they RDF was originally invented, if my memory serves, in the mid-30s, and I think the first ship in the Royal Navy had it was the Sheffield.
It was just a change in name, not in what you were doing.
Well, it was a change in name and a much superior piece of equipment. Firstly, we didn't have to turn the aerials by hand anymore. Whereas on the Pollux, we were turning an aerial with a wheel on the side of a steering wheel on a bus. And it was all done by hand. And in a false 8 gale in the Atlantic, it tore your arms out. With this American equipment, it was all power operated. You just switched on the antenna and it just turned around. Wonderful. Life was quite blissful.
Was it easy to use?
Oh, yes.
Other than that, I mean,
yeah, very easy. You lined up the ship's head with the set, so that the set was facing at the time with the ship's head, and everything was relative to the ship's head, range of bearing, especially bearing. And very clear, there was but once again, I think there was 3 ranges, which you did change the range by turning a knob. And I think it was 5. I think it was each concentric circle was 2,000 yards. And then it went to, think it was 10 miles, and after that I was in 120 miles, but I cannot remember. It's too long ago. All I can tell you is it was the most efficient little set I ever worked with. We all had the utmost respect for it. Now, I will say this, that the magnetron was surrounded by a casing because I think it could be injurious to the health. The actual magnetron on the ship was on the deck below us in the WT office.
I think we'll come to that when we come to the captains. No, I mean, because I want to save some of this stuff on the SL, sir.
Okay, we went on to this course at Virginia Beach.
Now, I want to ask you, how did you get on with the US service personnel?
I was just going to say, it's quite interesting. There was four of us that are in. And I was amazed. Obviously, I knew, I'd heard a little bit of history, I'd read a little about the American Civil War. And obviously, there were lots of the US Navy, Japanese sailors, who'd been born in the southern states. And if my memory is right, I don't think there was any colored fellows at all. And there was fellows born in the northern states. And the Civil War was still being fought verbally to an almost unbelievable degree. I could not believe my ears. And they were screaming at each other, Yank, and screaming at each other, Rebel. I never actually saw anybody come to blows. But the arguments were very, very strong. Hate.
Not joking, then.
No. This was not a joke. This was really feeling. Strong feeling. To the extent that there's all these years later, I mean, it's nearly 60 years, I can still remember the feeling. And we used to be asked, what do you think? And the four of us had agreed to us before when we got on our own, we thought we ought to sit on the fence, and all we said was that we can't take sides because we don't know enough about it. Which was, I think, a diplomatic way of getting out and getting involved in being on one side or the other. I think we spent a month there, but I can't remember.
The other thing I want to ask is, this business of segregation and the various sorts, the anti, oh, no dogs or sailors, was there any black segregation there? How were you as a Jewish person? I mean,
I had no anti-Semitism whatsoever. It never came. One of the families in Asbury Park was a Jewish family, but they entertained the non-Jews the same as they entertained me.
But I mean at Virginia Beach, where you'd seen them signs.
That was at Virginia, north of Virginia. That's a north of Virginia Beach was 10, 20 miles south on the coast.
So there was no real trouble for you about it?
No, I never had any problem of that nature.
Were you aware of black segregation, things like that?
I think I was. I seem to remember seeing things, but I can't specifically state them.
It wasn't important to you at the time.
It was the sort of thing you got on with your life.
What about the relationship between British naval personnel and American naval personnel? You've said it was all right, but what about the regulars? Because there are stories that the regular American Navy hated the British Navy.
And
were you aware of this?
Hand on heart, no. Not until I got to Boston at a later date.
So, at the moment, the time we're talking while you were at Asbury Barracks and while you were at Virginia Beach...
I found no marked antagonism. I think that states it clearly enough.
You got on well with
it? I got on well. Oh, yes, we used to go in Virginia Beach, we'd go ashore with these guys, they'd buy us drinks, we'd buy them drinks, we'd laugh and joke with the girls, just the same as if we were all the same. I found no bad feeling as a gardener. Not that I was aware of. After all, you have to understand this, that people don't always show their feelings. I mean, that's life, isn't it? But on the surface, it was a good relationship.
Anything else about the course at Virginia Beach? Or then you'd go back to Asbury Park, would you?
Then we went back to Asbury Park.
Did the hospitality while you were there begin to die down? Because some people have seemed to have thought that...
No, I never found any bad feeling at all. The hospitality, whether it be in Asbury Park, whether it was in New York, when I eventually went to Boston, in Europe, New Jersey, I always found I was well received.
What about your visit to New York? Do you remember much about it? What was it like?
Well, I mainly spent time with my cousin. As regards being taken about, they were in very modest circumstances. I didn't stay with them. I stayed at a serviceman's place on Fifth Avenue.
What did you think of New York?
It was an exciting city. It was something to be seen. I mean, we had nothing like it here. The tower blocks and the skyscrapers. I went up the Empire State Building. I went to all the tourist places with my cousins. She took me around and, you know, really showed me everything that I could see. The week went in a flash. I used the USO facilities and obviously got extra tickets to take her with me. So she was in modest circumstances, so it was a great help to her that I was able to take her to places she'd only heard of, but wasn't able to afford. I saw the Empire State, I saw the Rockefeller Center, I saw the Rockettes, Statue of Liberty, went up the top of it. As you can imagine, I saw as many places I could because I didn't know if I was ever going to get the opportunity to see these again. So while I was there, I found myself on the opportunity. After the leave, I went back to Asbury Park, and then I was obviously called for the drafting office and sent up with the other fellows who were then starting to form the crew of our ship, and we were sent to Boston to Fargo Buildings, which was a building, a block, about as big as Selfridge in London, Oxford Street, and we were on one of the floors there, and I can't remember, I think it was the second or third floor, was the mess hall where we used to mess with all the American sailors who were also waiting to go to ships. And we found Fargo Buildings quite fascinating. The actual name, we asked about it, and of course it had been owned by Wells Fargo, the Pony Express people, which of course we immediately got very fascinated with the fact that we were staying to do with the Pony Express.
What sort of building was it inside? I mean, was it
like an enormous warehouse on floors, which were fitted out as barracks? One of the times when we were in a mess, we'd done our turnabout, scrubbing out and clearing up, and we just finished clearing up where the American chef, great big enormous, lovely coloured fellow, came over to us and said he was very pleased the way we cleared up. Would we like some ice cream? There was four of us, three others and myself. And obviously he said, yes, please. We all loved ice cream as kids. And he brought us, I kid you not, a gallon can of vanilla ice cream in four spoons. But we slowly waded our way through this, and I think our stomachs were completely frozen at the time we finished. But it was all part of the fun. And that's one of the things that I remember very clearly.
I presume you hadn't had much ice cream with it for ages before.
Well, we had it in Asbury Park, I mean, because when you went ashore in Asbury Park to these families, you lived like they did. There was no war there. It was something in the papers, but no hardship to them. Now, as regards getting involved with the Americans with punch-ups, I think I ought to tell you one little story. I had gone into Boston a US, a United States organization office, got tickets, gone to a dance not far, and met a very nice young woman, obviously normal relationships, and this was on a Friday. And she said, well, what was I doing on the Saturday? So I said, well, I am duty, but I think I can get a sub, which I arranged. And we met, and we went out. She paid her own way. She was very fair. She realized that I was very limited, and I had no tickets. And we went out and did I think we went to the movies, but I can't be sure. Went out to dinner. And the course of dinner, she tells me that her mother and father were away for the weekend. Well, that was like a bloody umpteen pounds in my pocket. Jolly Jack, there's a girl advertising it. So I said, well, yes. And after dinner, we went back to her place, just on the outskirts of Boston, a place called Cambridge. I remember it quite clearly, which is not far from Harvard. We'd gone there in a taxi. One of these American ranch style houses. And I won't go into all the gruesome details of what the performance was, but suffice to say that it was quite a pleasant evening, warm, but I didn't wait because the window was open, ground floor, and Johnny Jack had taken his clothes off and rather sensibly, didn't realize that, put them over a chair near the with a window. This girl and I were very busy in bed about 3 o'clock in the morning when we hear a key go and go, oh my God, she says, my parents are coming home, I didn't know. You have to go. So yours truly jumps out of bed and to put it quite mildly with everything standing on end, grabbed his clothes and his bits and got out into the backyard and got dressed. With some difficulty, I might say, because if you're aware of how tight sailors' trousers are, I had my problems. Without the back gate, she said there was a gate out the back. Yeah, went down an area, came out the street, and then I've got to give up. I've only got a few cents in my pocket. I might have had a dollar. I can't afford a taxi. The taxi's about this is earlier. So I start to walk. I knew the German director. I got one or two short lifts and got into the centre of Boston. Now, the centre of Boston has a street running from one end to the other, and there's a station, they've got an overhead railway there. There's a station on one end called Winter and at the other end Summer. And I'm plodding along very badly, but as you can imagine, having been done out of the oats. And I'm passing a big shop. Plate glass windows. And there's four American sailors coming towards me. And they're spread right across it, as the Americans were calling the sidewalk, we were calling the pavement. And they weren't going to move, and I wasn't going to get the gutter. I wasn't in the frame of mind to give way. And I put my arms up like that around and went straight for the two in the middle, shoving them out the way. Well, of course, that started a fight, to say the least. Whether they were regulars or whether they were American hostilities, I don't know, they were false aliens. Well, I remember the old adage, don't wait, hit first and ask questions afterwards. And one of them came with me, about an average size fellow, and I'm not exactly quite big, but I was bigger than him, and I hit him quite hard, and I caught him completely off balance. And I was fairly fit, and my 11.5 stone was all behind the punch, and it went straight to a plate glass window. And the next one came at me, and I let fly with my right foot because I was right footed at football. And my boot caught him right in the you know where's. And that's the last thing I remember, because it appears the other two had a court. Bottle of DNA, you remember in those days, the boilers came in court with the old screw top. And they hit me over the back and said, if you want me to strip off, then I'll show you the mark. And the bottle shattered and went right through my very faint mask now, but it cut me very badly.
And I obviously, to say the least, passed out. Rolled into the gutter where they were proceeding to kick my ribs in. I don't know anything about it. But shortly after they started this, a couple came driving past in the car and stopped, shouted, and said, "We'll call the police." And they did call the police. These other two ran off. And it appears two ambulances arrived, one for me and one for the two American sailors. I don't know a thing about it. I'm out. My eyes, I started to become conscious, my eyes opened in a ward in a hospital, very dizzy, vivified. There was pain everywhere, but extreme pain. And I hadn't been laying there very long, and I can remember looking, there was a noise, and I looked towards the end of the ward to my right. There were double doors, rather, without the old fashioned wards here. And in comes our first lieutenant with four chaps off the ship, because we'd already been consigned to the ship by then, although we were still living in private buildings. And we were on the ship by then. And the guys were in patrol uniform, belt, gaiters, chin straps down, armbands on, battens. Two of them have got a stretcher. In those days there were stretchers under canvas and bamboo rolled up. And he stands at the foot of the bed and he reads the Riot Act. Disgrace the behaviour in a friendly country. Prejudice the name of discipline. I can't remember all those, but he read me the Riot Act. And he came up and leant over me on one side of the bed and he said, "How are you feeling, Father?" I said, "I'm in terrible pain, sir." I felt awful, I can remember. He said, "Well, you're better off with two fellows either side of you." I said, "What do you mean, sir?" He said, "Well, that fellow had any point behind it." He said, "He's had, I think he said, two blood transfusions. The glass had fallen on the back of his neck." He said, "This is," and the fellow in the bed of us was going to come off earlier. You had kicked. He said, "This has gone to the Admiralty in Washington." He said, "I've had to go in front of a local judge and get you released. We're sailing at 4 o'clock this afternoon. We're putting you down. We're taking you back on board." And with a lot to do, they marched out of the ward with me strapped in this, and we went back to the ship. And that sort of finished it up.